Winston, a serial in 6 parts by Peter Tinniswood. Number 3, Without a Doubt.
Winston's talking to her again. He's been talking to her all morning. They're laughing. They're whispering. He's touching her arm. She's holding his hand. What on earth is going on between Winston and Rosie?
Don't let them browbeat you, Rosie. Don't let them blackmail you. You've been offered that job in London. Well, you take it. You jump at it. Look, you grab your chance to make a new life for yourself.
It's not that simple, Winston.
Why not?
Well, they don't actually say anything I can get my teeth into. Do you understand that, Winston?
Oh, I think I does, Rosie.
It's the way they look at me. There's this deep pain and deep hurt in their eyes. I feel like a traitor, as I'm stabbing them in the back, and I just can't bear it. It's absolutely intolerable. The selfish bastard.
Ah, that's right, Rosie. Let it all come ripping out. All the bile, all the anger. You rest your head on Winston's shoulder, lovely, beautiful girl. You listen to old Winston, eh? And then you do as he says.
He's holding her in his arms now. He's stroking the nape of her neck. She's closed her eyes and she's pressing herself into him. Oh, God, what's happening to us?
Well, I think she should go.
What?
I think Rosie should take the job and go and live in London. Do the world of good, broaden her horizons, put hairs on her chest.
But what about me?
What about you, William?
Well, if she goes, I'll be the only young person left in the house.
Well, I'm not exactly decrepit, you know, William. I've still got a good few years to go before I fall into my dotage.
I didn't mean it like that, Nancy. I know you're still young, in your own sort of way. You're in the prime and full maturity of being young. But, good Lord, you've had years and years of experience of it. But the point is, you're not as young as I am. And I need the stimulus of young people of my own age about me.
Why?
What?
Well, you're hardly a dashing young gadabout, are you? You know, my idea of the gay, abandoned, devil-may-care masher. I mean, well, what do you do with your life? You sit at home all day writing those ghastly books about railways. You got a permanent cold. And in the evening, all you do is rattle your cufflinks.
How dare you talk to me like that? How dare you? My railway books are not ghastly. Everyone knows that I've given the world entirely new insights into the Cheshire Lines Railway. Everyone knows my history of the railways of the Low Countries is an absolute classic of its kind. And I do not rattle my cufflinks. I do not.
Calm down, William, calm down. You'll come out in another of your rashes.
I do not come out in rashes. I'm still a young man. And I'm telling you both here and now that it would be a disaster for me if Rosie leaves this house.
Why? You don't get on with her. You're always rowing and arguing.
Well, that's really because we're extremely quarrelsome by nature.
You take after your mother there.
What?
Well, your mother was the most quarrelsome woman I've ever met in the whole of my life. You'd say something simple and innocent to her, like, "Hello, old bean, nice day, isn't it?" And she'd say, "What do you mean, nice day? It's a bloody awful day." So I'd say, "All right, then, it's a bloody awful day." And she'd say, "What do you mean, it's not all that bad?" Fearfully quarrelsome old party, your mother. Nice day, isn't it?
What do you mean, nice day? It's a bloody awful day. Winston's out there in the garden cuddling my sister. The whole fabric of the family is cracking up in front of our eyes. Our lives are being ruined, and you say it's a nice day.
All right, then, Nancy, it's a bloody awful day. But I still think Rosie should go. I'd jigger off myself if I were 20 years younger.
What? What's that you say?
I said, Nancy, that I'd jigger off tomorrow if I weren't so old. And didn't enjoy Winston's cooking so much. I mean, it's hardly a stimulating life we lead here, is it?
I beg your pardon, Father.
It's boring, Nancy. It's mind-numbing, frightful. I'm a well-travelled man. I've had adventures. I've seen the great natural wonders of the world. Man-eating tigers stalking the swamps of the Sudamans. Maasai women smearing their bold and naked bodies with wild honey. Ranji scoring a ton before lunch at Maidstone. And look at me now. Cowed, defeated, a prisoner of total inexorable boredom.
Father, that is the most disgusting, obscene statement I have heard in the whole of my life. For the past 20 years, this family have been slaves to your whims and your caprices. We've trailed round the country, moving from house to house, from town to town, for one reason and one reason only, you. Why? because you couldn't manage the stairs, or the public library brought on your cough, or the neighbour's children brought on your guitar. This whole family and its lives have revolved around one person and one person only, you. And who has suffered most? One person and one person alone, me. William's got his books, Rosie's got her designing, Father's got his secret drinking, and what have I got? Nothing. I've dedicated my life to you. I've sacrificed everything. And now William turns round and tells me I'm an old maid, and you tell me I'm some sort of jailer locking you up in a prison of boredom. I hate you. I hate the whole lot of you. You've destroyed my life.
Yes. Bloody awful day, William.
It's true. They've destroyed my life. Everything I've ever done has had only one motive, to keep the family together, to calm them down, to settle their quarrels, to foster their talents. And what about my talents? None. I haven't even got the basic talent of a woman, to find herself a man. I've been near it, many times. There was a golf professional in the Dukeries. He was so attentive and kind, and he was terribly flattering about my work in the bunkers. Then there was that lovely radio producer in the West Country who lived next door to us with his Morgan three-wheeler. He used to wrinkle his nose and he laughed, and he wore maroon fisherman's smocks. I know he was keen on me. He used to call me darling. But then he called everyone darling, even the milkman. I think he might have asked me out if only he'd been more articulate. So many men. And each time, just as we were getting close, Father stuck his oar in and off we moved to another part of the country. I'm an attractive woman. I know I am. I always have been. I'm as beautiful as Rosie, only I'm slightly older. Well, what's wrong with being slightly older than your younger sister? It's no crime, is it? It's not a cross you have to bear all your life. So many men. And the one man who has stepped forward and come out into the open and made his intentions patently and perfectly clear is a village poacher. Winston, the beer-sodden philanderer with a fat brown belly and stubble over his chin and tattoos over his nipples and oh, Winston, Winston, Winston.
Winston! Winston! Winston!
In here, William. In the kitchen, look.
Ah. Not silly, have I?
Not really, William. I'm just in the middle of making a Brabant praline torta with Kurt.
Gosh. Is that a cake?
Oh, he's a cake, William. He's a cake without a doubt. There then, my old Winsy Bass, and what can old Winston do for you?
Well, you remember what we were talking about last week?
Yes. Betty Abel's natural endowments as regards her endowments.
No, about me changing my style of writing.
Ah, yes, writing mucky books instead of them railway watches.
That's right. And you said if I wanted to do that, I'd have to leave here and roam the world and face all its dangers and excitements and have dark, wild adventures with wild, rampant women.
That is right, William, that I did.
Well, what sort of clothes do you think I'll need?
What?
Well, I don't want to make a fool of myself, do I? I don't want to be improperly dressed when I'm drinking strong coffee and cognac with the ladies of the night in Paris.
Wait a minute, William. Hold on. Do I gather, Mr. Misley, that you have decided to take up my advice and sling your hook out of this house in the bosom of the family?
Well, not in so many words, Winston, but I am considering it. It's certainly quite high on my agenda for future projects, after I finish my slim volume on the history of the Manchester South Junction and Alchicombe Railway.
And what, if I might be so bold as to ask, has brought about this change of mind?
Rosie.
Ah, Rosie.
Yes. I've been awake night after night thinking about this job she's been offered in London and what would happen to me if she took it. I'd be distraught, Winston. Totally distraught.
Well, of course you would, William.
And what would become of me?
I'll tell you, William. I'll tell you. You'd grow into a wizened little turnip of an old man. Huh. You would become a secret drinker like your father, look. You would be slowly strangled by bitterness, slowly strangled by resentment and remorse for what you didn't do when you had the chance. Most likely your doodahs would drop off too.
Oh, dear.
You are facing the biggest decision in your life, William. It is the crisis time, look. Make a wrong choice now, and your old future will be blighted like a field of carrots overwhelmed by weevils. The choice is yours, William.
The earth is splitting apart beneath your feet. Stay where you are, and there is drudgery and despair. Leap across the divide, and there is fulfillment, excitement, artistic satisfaction, and birds with ginormous bristles.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, I think I'd better go lie down for a minute. I knew that life was changing all around me this morning when I saw the postmistress wearing sunglasses. Excuse me, Winston. I think I'm coming out in a rash on my elbows.
First Rosie, now William. There'll be panic stations in the family now, without a doubt there will.
I've called this emergency family confab because I want to bring things out into the open.
What things?
The crisis in the family.
All that.
Yes, Father, that. Oh, yes, I know what you're all thinking. Nancy's having another one of her panics. Nancy's blowing her top again and making a drama out of nothing. Well, never mind. All we do is sit here and smile at her and humour her and...
No, Nancy, no. It's not like that. You have your say. Talk to us. We'll listen.
Yes. Well, all I want to say is this. We've always been a united family, haven't we?
Yes.
We've had our ups and downs. My God, have we had our ups and downs. Quarrels, tantrums, hysterics, panic, the whole works. But we've always been united, right?
Right.
So all I want to know is what's going on. Why are we cracking up? Rosie? William, Father. I see. It's Winston, isn't it? Winston's behind all this. It's Winston who's trying to destroy us. Yes, Rosie? Yes, William? I'll try to be cool, calm and collected. Since Winston came to live in this house, our lives have changed out of all recognition. Of course, at first, you all wanted to throw him out. You were clamouring for it.
I wasn't.
Yes, you were.
No, I wasn't.
Shut up! Shut up, shut up, shut up! Thank you. You all wanted to get rid of Winston, and now what? Rosie's in the garden, whispering to him, cuddling him, holding his hand, wanting to leave us and set up home in London. William's mooning around all day long.
I'm not mooning. I'm thinking.
Thinking about what? Thinking about deserting us?
Yes, well...
Good Lord, even Father's changed. He stopped telling us his interminably long and boring stories about India.
Well, it's only because I've got another string to my bow, Nancy.
What other string to your bow?
Interminably long and boring stories about the Davis Cup.
The Davis Cup?
Yes. It is a fact, not generally known, that in the year 1966, India reached the final challenge round of the Davis Cup when they were defeated by Australia in Melbourne. Or was it Adelaide? No, the point is...
Shut up, Father! Shut up, shut up, shut up! I'm not playing the role of martyr, but it is a simple fact that I have sacrificed the best part of my life, devoting myself entirely to your interests. I'm not asking you to say yes or to say no. There's no need, because deep down in your hearts, you know it's true. Well, my dears, that sacrifice is not going to be wasted. Do you understand that? I'm not going to waste all those years of dedicating myself solely to your welfare. I am not going to let them go without a fight. So, listen very carefully. Like it or not, my dears, our lives are inextricably bound together. As individuals, we could not exist on our own. We would die. Oh, yes, you've got your dreams. I know you've got those. Look at Rosie's. Glamorous job in London. Her own flat. Handsome men clamouring for her favours. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Sounds sublime. You wouldn't survive it for a week, Rosie. At the first hint of happiness, at the first sign of contentment, you'd come bolting back to the family, clamouring for its disputes, craving for the quarrels and the conflicts, grovelling for them. You cannot survive without us, Rosie. Yes? Am I right? And you, William? What are you hatching up, my dear? What little plans has Winston sowed into that starched and stiff little imagination of yours?
Winston has nothing to do with what I feel. And I have to say here and now that I take the strongest possible exception to the tone and manner of your attitude.
Oh, don't be so bloody pompous. Shut up and let her speak. Go on, Nancy.
I love you, William. I really love you. And you need my love. Oh, boy, do you need it. You need my love. You need Rosie's contempt. You need Father's indifference. Without your daily dose of that, my sweet, you die. And you, Father, what about you?
No, I'm soldiering on, Nancy. Soldiering on. Yeah, I used to say that to your mother when we lived in Calcutta. Or was it called poor?
Who cares? Who the hell cares?
I'm sick and tired of listening to his stories.
Hush, William, be quiet. Carry on, Father, we're all ears.
Yeah, well, I remember this day particularly well. It's etched deep in my memory. It was a Sunday. Or was it a Wednesday? I don't suppose it matters all that much, really. The point is, we had a fire in the kitchen. Fearfully inconvenient. The whole place burned down. The cook, Waller, for some unaccountable reason, took umbrage and attacked the ablutions, Waller, with a whopping great cleaver. Oh, a frightful din they kicked up till the police came and belaboured them with their staves. We had to have cold lunch that day, and we'd hardly got stuck into the asparagus when the roof caved in during an electrical storm. The police phoned to say they'd charged the cook with murder, and your mother was rushed to hospital with acute appendicitis. And when I visited her for the first time 2 or 3 days later, she smiled at me warily and with most commendable thoughtfulness asked me how I was coping. I took my pipe from my mouth, tapped it out on her bedhead and said, "Oh, don't bother about me. I'm soldiering on."
All right. You win. I stay.
What?
I said I'm staying. Now, that's enough. There's no more to be said. The subject is closed. I'm staying here. The family is still united. God rot your souls!
And when I got back from hospital, they told me war had been declared.
I couldn't sleep that night. I tossed and I turned. I thought of Rosie when she was born. She looked furious. She looked livid. When I saw her for the first time in Mother's arms, all crinkled and wrinkled, she had this look on her face as much to say, "Why me? Why should this have happened to me? I didn't ask to be born." She hasn't changed. Then I thought of William when he was a little boy, with baggy khaki shorts flapping below his knees, and his black plimsolls and his fair out pullover and his big ears. He always looked so puzzled. He always had a frown on his face. I remember once taking him to see the trains at York, and I said to him, "What do you want to be when you grow up, William?" And he said, "I want to be a pirate, and I want to have adventures, and I want to marry a princess and write storybooks about engine drivers, and be a famous writer and live in a big house with Lawrence of Arabia and O.S. Nock." Then he clutched my hand tightly and smiled his puzzled smile and said, "But I don't suppose I ever will." Next morning, Winston came up to me as I was in the garden watering the roses. He stared at me silently for a moment with his great, gnarled, scarred brown hands resting on his hips. Then he said,
"I'm taking you out for dinner, Nancy. For lunch, look."
"I'm afraid it's not convenient just at this moment, Winston. Some other time, maybe."
"I'll have my motor in my car at the front door in half an hour's time. You go and get washed, comb your hair, spray yourself with scent and be there. Half an hour, right?"
And I did as I was told. And Winston was waiting for me at the front door. And he was wearing a double-breasted navy blue blazer and sleek grey flannel trousers. And he'd cut himself on the neck with his razor, and there was a sliver of blood-sodden toilet paper stuck to the wound. I got into his motor, his car, and we drove off. We didn't speak. It was the most perfect day. Swifts screeched, shy horses whinnied. We drove over the smooth, silky shoulders of the downs. We dropped into the dark, smouldering flanks of the valley. We stopped at a pub on the banks of a chalk stream. I sat in the garden. It had ornamental herons made of stone and an aviary with tropical birds. Winston went to the bar and returned with a pint of beer and a glass of grapefruit juice. He stared at me silently for a moment. He drank back his pint in a single gulp. He went for another. He took a small, neat, fastidious sip from it with his little finger crooked. And then he said,
"So Rosie ain't leaving?"
"Apparently not."
"Why ain't she leaving, Nancy?"
"I haven't the faintest idea, Winston. I certainly don't think it's any concern of yours."
"No?"
"No."
"You think she'll be me, don't you, Nancy? You think you've got old Winston whacked?"
"Nothing of the sort, Winston. You don't come into it."
"No?"
"No."
"But I loves you, Nancy. I desires you. I want you."
"No, you do not."
"Yes, I does, Nancy. Without a doubt, I does."
"Now, listen to me, Winston. It's high time we stopped all this nonsense."
"Nonsense, Nancy?"
"Nonsense, Winston. You made matters perfectly clear to me the day you moved into this house, very much against my will, I must say."
"Oh, yes, Nancy?"
"Yes, Winston. You told me you were hell-bent on getting rid of my sister, my brother, my father, so you and I could live together and alone in the house."
"Of course I did, Nancy, without a doubt I did."
"Well, it won't work, Winston. It will not work. Rosie won't move, William won't move, Father's incapable of it. The family is going to stay together and there is not a thing you can do about it.
No, Nancy.
No, Winston, no, no, no.
Do you remember the day of the village fete last year, Nancy?
What?
The village fete, Nancy, do you remember it?
Well, bits and bobs, I suppose.
Not bits and bobs, Nancy, he remembers every single item of it. In the morning you was crying. I didn't see you. I didn't come anywhere near you that morning, but I knew you was crying. And in the afternoon I found you pressed into the old holly bush at the side of the meadow where they was holding the fete, and you was shivering, and I took hold of your hand, and I led you to my motor, my car, and I drove you to the wood at the back of my house.
Winston, please.
And I helped you out of the car, and I took you through the wood to a little glade with a willow bane and a colt's foot. And you was wearing a wide black skirt and a white blouse. And we sat down side by side beneath the old beech tree, and I says to you, you ain't never had a man before, has you, Nancy?
Please, Winston, please.
And I pressed myself into you, Nancy, and I kissed you on the cheek. And while I was kissing you, I opened the buttons on the front of your blouse.
That's enough, Winston, stop it! Stop it at once! Please, Winston, please. Please.
And when I come round to see you next morning with a new dame pipe for your outside bogs, you looked at me and your old face was beaming, and you shouted at the top of your voice, I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm happy.
And I was, Winston. I was happy.
And you can be happy again, Nancy.
But I am happy, Winston. Can't you understand that? I'm happy keeping the family together. That's where my happiness lies.
Happiness, Nancy.
Happiness, Winston.
Ah, but there's happiness and happiness, isn't there, Nancy? To one man, happiness is writing a Beethoven concerto. To another, it's having a good, satisfying bowel movement. And who is to say, Nancy, that Beethoven didn't get more pleasure out of having a good, productive session in the ablutions offices than in writing the Moonlight Sonata?
Oh, Winston! No! Oh, Winston, you are absolutely incorrigible!
That I am, Nancy, that I am, without a doubt. I love you, Nancy. I desire you, I want you, and you can be sure of this. When old Winston wants something, he surely gets it finally and in the end. Look, indeed he does, without a doubt.
We drove home in silence. Winston cooked us sweetbreads in mustard gravy and summer pudding for supper. I listened to Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata on the gramophone in my sewing room, and then I went to bed. I slept soundly. I dreamed of chalk streams and ornamental herons. I dreamed of swifts screeching and shire horses whinnying. I dreamed of a holly bush and a glade with willow bane and colt's foot. I dreamed of the great shifting, whispering, shimmering canopy of a beech tree looking deep down into my eyes. And when I woke, the first words I said were, I'm sure Beethoven wasn't at all like that. And I was happy. I was happy as I dusted the bedrooms. I was happy as I worked on the new cushion covers in my sewing room. I was happy as I arranged the flowers in the drawing room. And then I saw them. Winston and Rosie. Rosie was wearing her blue velvet trousers and her dove-grey cashmere sweater, and her blonde hair was loose and free. And Winston was wearing a double-breasted navy blue blazer and sleek grey flannel trousers. And there was a neat square of sticking plaster attached to his neck. And they drove off in his motor, in his car.
What a lovely pub, Winston.
Not bad, is he, Rosie? You don't mind sitting in the garden?
Not at all. It's wonderful. Are those things flamingos, Winston?
No, Rosie. Ornamental herons. And them birds scratching at the bottom of the aviary are tropical birds. Ornamental quail, look. Only they're made of flesh and blood, and them errands are made of concrete freshly knocked off from Tommy Lennon's builder's yard.
Fancy you knowing a thing like that, Winston.
Oh, I knows everything what goes on round here, Rosie. Without a doubt, I do.
Well, then, Winston, cheers. And thanks for bringing me to this smashing pub.
You are very welcome, Rosie. It's the first time I've ever took one of my bits of fluff to this pub, look.
Then I'm very honoured, Winston.
So, Rosie, you ain't going to London, then?
That's right, Winston. I ain't going to London.
Right.
I don't want to talk about it.
Rosie?
Yes?
Rosie Hampson, you just look me straight in the eyes and you tell me firm and plain and truthful why you ain't going to London. Tell me. Tell old Winston the truth.
Because of Nancy.
Say it again.
Because of Nancy, goddamn you. It's always because of Nancy.
Everything we do in this family is for the sake of Nancy. Oh, outsiders don't know it. They look at us and they think to themselves, poor, noble, long-suffering Nancy. She sacrificed the best years of her life, pampering and cosseting that dreadful family of hers. Sweet, gentle Nancy. She's a saint. She's a real saint. Well, she's not, Winston. Far from it.
No?
No. She's a selfish, thoughtless, domineering bitch. And she always gets her way, Winston. Everything that anyone does in this family is for Nancy. We must keep Nancy happy. We must not upset Nancy. All those moves we've made, they weren't because of Father. Oh, no, they were because of Nancy. Just when we're settling in, enjoying ourselves, finding new friends, she'd up and off and make the excuse of Father's health. And why? I'll tell you. Because if we were happy, we'd fall apart. And Nancy's one role in life is keeping us together. Stop that, and her life is ruined. She's destroyed. And so, Winston, that is why Nancy always gets her way, and that is why I am not going to London, because of bloody Nancy.
But you can serve Nancy better by going to London, Rosie. You can do her the greatest favour what you've ever done her in the whole of your life.
What?
I'll tell you something, Rosie, what I never told no one before. You remember it's the day of the village fete last year?
Yes.
And you remember that Nancy went missing all afternoon?
Yes.
And I was missing too, weren't I, Rosie?
Yes. Yes, you were.
Well, Nancy and me was together.
What?
I took her to the wood at the back of my house, Rosie, and we lay together under the old beech tree and we... Well, you know what I mean, Rosie. We done it.
What? Nancy? Done it?
Oh, yes. Without a doubt. The trouble is, Rosie, I don't reciprocate. I don't love her one little scrap. It's you what I loves, Rosie.
What?
It's you what I loves, Rosie. And one day, very soon, old Winston's going to have to tell the whole wild world. And if he does that, can you imagine what it will do to Nancy? She adores me, see, Rosie? She worships the ground what I tread on, look. She wants me, Rosie. She desires me. She loves me. And if you wasn't around here to tempt me with your temptation, well, I reckons one day, in the fullness of time, I could find feelings for her. And we might... Well, we might...
Do it again?
Not on my part, Rosie. Not on my part.
I don't know what to say, Winston.
There's nothing to say, Rosie, but there is plenty to do. Oh, yes, without a doubt, Rosie, there is plenty for you to do.
I've an announcement to make.
Well, go on then, Rosie. Tell us. There's no need to be all stiff and formal about it.
I've decided to take the job in London.
What?
I don't intend to discuss it, Nancy. I don't intend to state my reasons, but I am going to London, and that is that.
Can I come with you, Rosie?
What?
Let me come with you, Rosie. We can share a flat together, and I'll do the cooking and the cleaning and the ironing. Well, I'm not having adventures with pirates and wild rampant women.
Oh, my God, my God!
Helicopters, wacko, jolly. What a nice day. Oh, has it been a bloody awful day? What do you think, Nancy?
What do I think, Father? Well, it's been one or the other. That it has, without a doubt.
In Without a Doubt, Part 3 of Winston by Peter Tinniswood, Winston was played by Bill Wallace, Father by Maurice Denham, Nancy by Shirley Dixon, Rosie by Liz Golding, and William by Christian Ronsker. Winston was directed in Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.